mini-series, tackling hypertension head-on. Part 2, Guidelines. Where are we now and where are we going?
Welcome to the second episode of our exciting new series, providing you with the most up-to-date information on hypertension to support you in managing your patients most effectively. My name is Alta Schutte, Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of New South Wales and the George Institute for Global Health in Sydney. In today's discussion, we'll zoom into issues related to the pharmacological treatment of hypertension. We'll focus in particular on how to manage patients using cardiovascular risk-based approaches in light of traditional hypertension guidelines and how these compare to the latest updates in international guidelines. We are joined by Natalie Ruffell, who is the Healthcare Programs Manager at the National Heart Foundation of Australia. Natalie has spearheaded major components with the release of the 2023 Cardiovascular Disease Risk Guidelines. And we're also joined from London by Neil Poulter, Professor of Preventive Cardiovascular Medicine at the Imperial College London. Neil is a world-renowned expert on the management of hypertension, and most importantly, he has co-authored several sets of international hypertension guidelines. So I think we'll start off with Natalie. Congratulations on the release of the Heart Foundation CVD Risk Guidelines. Could you tell us a bit more about these guidelines and how GPs incorporate these in their practice?
Thanks, Alta. Absolutely. I mean, these primary prevention guidelines have been updated for the first time in over a decade. So we've seen strong engagement from general practice. After all, prevention of cardiovascular disease is bread and butter for our general practice teams. And the guidelines themselves have not only been updated in terms of their recommendations, but also we've introduced a new cardiovascular risk calculator, the Australian CVD risk calculator. And the guidelines themselves offer a few new pieces of advice and recommendations for our general practitioners across the country, including things like a broadened age range for risk assessment or screening in your patient population. We see the application of the new cardiovascular risk calculator, which has been modified and recalibrated from the New Zealand Predict risk equation, and of course, recalibrated for our Australian population. And we also see the introduction of reclassification factors, which are additional risk variables that couldn't be included in the calculator themselves, but are important considerations for your patient's individual risk. We've created a broader emphasis on communicating cardiovascular risk to your patient. After all, if patients don't understand their risk of developing heart disease, then they're not going to do anything about it. And that shared decision-making and communication is helped by the calculator itself, which is really interactive and has patient decision support tools built all throughout it. Management is probably the least within the scope of this new update. And so detailed recommendations around blood pressure and lipid-lowering management is not within this guideline. But broadly speaking, we do provide recommendations about where to target your pharmacotherapy, and that is traditionally and still remains in individuals that are at highest risk. But these guidelines go as far as to recommend considering pharmacotherapy for those that are at intermediate risk of developing cardiovascular disease.
Thanks, Natalie. That's fantastic. I'm just curious to know the exact age range for which it is available.
This is a primary prevention guideline, so people that do not already have existing cardiovascular disease. The guidelines recommend assessing their cardiovascular risk via the calculator in people that are 45 to 79 years old. For people with diabetes, we recognise that they often have an earlier onset of cardiovascular disease, so we recommend assessing their risk from the age of 35. And for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, of course, they experience cardiovascular disease much earlier. And so they should be assessed using the cardiovascular risk calculator from the age of 30 at the latest. And their individual cardiovascular risk factors, like their blood pressure, cholesterol and blood sugar levels, should be screened much earlier, from the age of 18 at the latest.
Is this something that a practice nurse could do?
Absolutely. We find in practice, in the previous guidelines, but even the most current one, application of these recommendations in general practice works best when you have the whole team working together. That is front of house reception staff, the practice manager, and absolutely the practice nurse that can do a lot of the assessment part of the risk equation, collecting information about the patient, their history, their medical history, their observation data, including their blood pressure, and even starting the process of calculating their cardiovascular risk and then passing it on to the GP. So we find a lot of general practices across the country are setting aside time in their schedules for prevention clinics or risk assessment clinics and really utilising the best of their team to make it happen. And that includes things like applying the new Heart Health Check Medicare item, of which over 500,000 people have had a heart health check so far. So we've seen that great uptake.
That's really great to see this being implemented. And also, as you say, team-based care, we know this is really an important move for Australia. So Natalie, once a patient's five-year CVD risk has now been estimated, let's say it's 12%, what are the next steps? Do the CVD risk guidelines recommend that specific mitigation treatment strategy? You referred to that a bit earlier.
Yeah. So firstly, you know, you've calculated that person's risk and let's say the calculator spit out a score of 12%. The next stage is the reclassification factors. So considering whether or not this patient has additional factors that might upclassify or downclassify their cardiovascular risk. And these are factors such as their ethnicity, including whether or not they are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, things like their coronary artery calcium score, which is a contentious issue, but one that absolutely needed to be included in this guideline. Things like whether or not they have a family history of premature cardiovascular disease, whether or not they have a reduced renal function, which is another important risk factor, and lastly, whether or not they have severe mental illness. So these features may be applied to the patient to help up-classify their risk category or down-classify their risk category, and it's really up to the clinician's judgment at that stage. We'd share decision-making with the patient to make that call, but we recommend reclassification for people that are closer to a risk threshold. So you've passed that stage, and let's just say you didn't reclassify the patient. They continued on with the 12% score. So that puts them in the high-risk category. So that's the other thing that's changed for our GPs and our general practice teams across the country. The risk categories are different, and that's because we have a new cardiovascular risk calculator. So now 10% or greater is high-risk. People that fit this category are recommended not only to have lifestyle modification, we recommend pharmacotherapy, that is initiating both blood pressure and lipid-lowering medication for these people unless there's contraindications or otherwise. So this patient should be treated.
So Natalie, when there's then the recommendation to treat either lipids or blood pressure, which guidelines are recommended to be used? Is it specified?
The guideline broadly recommends national clinical guidelines should be used that are risk factor specific, hypertension guidelines, lipids guidelines. And unfortunately, we don't always have up-to-date Australian guidelines in these areas. And so often clinicians will be looking for international guidelines, such as the European Society of Cardiology guidelines or otherwise. So it's really what's available and what's up-to-date that we recommend turning to next.
But what if a patient has a CVD risk score less than 5%, but blood pressure is high? Let's say blood pressure is 155 over 95 millimetres of mercury. What do the guidelines recommend to do then?
The guideline acknowledge that there will be situations where a patient may come back as low risk, less than 5%, but have individual risk factors that are really elevated. Things like high blood pressure over 160 was the threshold accepted by the expert steering group in this guideline, and a total cholesterol over 7.5. So in any of those cases, regardless of what the risk score is, the guideline group recommended treating those risk factors, including treating the blood pressure in that situation.
Just to clarify, that intermediate risk group between 5 and 10%, what is the recommendation there?
So lifestyle modification, as is the case for every risk category, but also that the guidelines recommend considering pharmacotherapy, blood pressure and lipid-lowering medication. And that really, at that stage, that's more of a shared decision-making process with you and your patient because there's sort of pros and cons and it will really come down to your individual patient.
Thanks so much, Natalie. Neil, I think these recent Australian CVD risk guidelines are certainly not the first to recommend risk-based approaches in primary care. What is the situation in the UK? Do you also have risk calculators and CVD risk guidelines, or do you have specific hypertension guidelines?
Well, every set of guidelines I've been involved with over the last 20 years or so, there's always a big section on assessing cardiovascular risk as an important part of the approach to managing. And I think that's become less and less important in terms of thresholds and targets for treatment, but more so to help get the message over to the patient to stimulate them to change their diets and lifestyles and to take on board their problem. If they understand that, I think it's a useful way. But as I think the guidelines have got more and more simple, and more assertive over the last decade or so. I think the impact of the risk assessment has been less and less on when you treat and how far you treat. Having said that, in UK, we do have Q-Risk. With our NICE guidelines, came out 2019, I think they were slightly old-fashioned. They also considered treatment at certain levels of risk where other guidelines have said treat. And the big determinants really in UK guidelines have been age. That's made a big difference. So obviously if you're under 40, you're quite likely with highest blood pressure, but under 40 to have low risk. Those people need investigating for secondary causes of hypertension, and you'll probably treat them anyway. And then we make slightly different cut points for the over 80s. I think we'll talk about it later, but I think that perhaps might go as well. And we'll turn towards frailty as being a decision. And I think important message that was mentioned that the physician's got to make a judgment. If they're a very frail patient for obvious reasons, you're not going to treat inappropriately. But back to the key question, yes, there is a thing called Q-Risk. They treat everybody on the basis of Q-Risk. You don't have to look at that. If the systolic's above 160, diastolic over 100, you treat. 140 to 159, then you evaluate the risk. And if you've got target organ damage, diabetes, CKD, established vascular disease, then you will treat, considering risk if you're less than 10% 10-year cardiovascular risk, but you would always treat if you've got any of those conditions and or if you're above 10% 10-year cardiovascular risk. So you jiggle around. One thing I would add into the mix, though, is accurate blood pressure measurement. It seems to me that rather more important than getting dead accurate evaluations of the absolute risk is an accurate measurement of the blood pressure. In UK, we make a big deal about you've got to have ABPM or home blood pressure readings to make the diagnosis. And I think that's valid. I think we should make a fuss about getting the measurement right. And then I would keep it very simple and use the risks to stimulate the patients to understand where they are and why they need to take this seriously.
Thanks, Neil. If we now focus on the latest development in international hypertension guidelines, could you provide some high-level updates, particularly since the Australian guideline is 2016 last updated and require an urgent update? So what would you think would be the key aspects to get on board here?
Well, yeah, I think if we look at the two latest lots of European guidelines, they're pretty similar. And the International Society of Hypertension guidelines, they are essentially simple. And that is everybody at 160 and above, everyone gets treated. 140 to 159, you can spend time on the non-pharmacological approach. But if that fails to get them to less than 140, you treat. Now, there are parts of the world in the international guidelines we had to consider countries where the facilities, the resources weren't big enough to treat everybody they should treat, which is, in my opinion, 140 and above. Then they say, okay, just give the drugs to the highest risk people. But that's purely because the resources wouldn't allow. I think the evidence is that we should be treating everybody at 140 and above if you've got resources. And that's having tried with the non-pharmacological approaches, which can be very effective. But if and when they fail, then we should be treating everybody. And that's pretty much what everyone said now. Furthermore, the targets have gone down. It used to be less than 140/90. We're now seeing pretty much 130/80 and below if you can tolerate it. The ESH guidelines, the most recent lots, that's what they said. Up to the age of 79, get it to 130 and below if you can tolerate for everybody up to that. And I think that's what we should be doing. And that's the drift. Very simple. 140/90 cut point, get it to 130/80 is to summarize the sort of most contemporary guidelines.
Yeah, I think that target issue is such an important one where we often see here when we look at primary care data that blood pressure is reduced just to 139 and then you're over the threshold. But it's obviously blood pressure varies from minute to minute and second to second. And therefore, getting it to a target of 130 over 80 is so much more effective in actually reducing the whole lot of the blood pressures of an individual. Anil, in terms of the medication, the specific medication recommendations, moving away from monotherapy has been one thing as first line. Would you like to discuss that a bit?
Yeah, again, four or five of the most recent guidelines have come together and agreed, including the African guidelines and the WHO guidelines, and that is that we should probably, for the majority of our patients, start with two drug classes, ideally as a single pill combination. The single pill combination bit is if you do that, the patients are more likely to take them. The adherence improves, you get more rapid, more effective blood pressure lowering. And if you're going for 130/80 and you're starting at 150, you need 20 millimeters systolic. You will not get that from one drug. So it makes sense. So single pill combination is the way to go. This is what's recommended. And we start with two drug classes for the majority of our patients. The exclusions to that really are the frail and those with minimal increased blood pressures and lowish risk. I think you can get away with one drug, but frail and these low risk, just elevated a bit, but nevertheless the diet and lifestyle hasn't worked, then I think you give monotherapy. But everybody else, kick off with two drugs, ideally as a single pill combo.
So the Hypertension Task Force here in Australia has identified as a priority to develop a one-page simplified treatment tool for hypertension that GPs could easily implement. There's also a plan to update the full guidelines, but I think this is more a practical tool to be used in daily practice and to also assist and slot in with the CVD risk guidelines when treatment is recommended. So, Natalie, do you think that would work well in terms of the current CVD risk guidelines?
Absolutely. I think this current cardiovascular risk guideline provides the front end of who to assess, how to assess it, when to reevaluate risk. And then it would be very complementary to have some more detailed guidance around individual risk factor treatment, including blood pressure, lipids, and even considering the broader implications in the diabetes space where there are more and more medicines looking at having beneficial cardiovascular effects. So I think it would work really well. Simplified guidance is always the way to go. So I think that your plan to have a simple one or two pager slotting in would be really effective.
Yes, I think the idea for this one-pager tool is based on a lot of international studies that have been implemented in different countries and shown, you know, it's very clear guidance, specific medication to be recommended. So we plan to evaluate that specifically for the Australian context. And Neil, you also mentioned before, you know, keep it simple. Is that also what you think would be most practical in your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one-siders work. We did them with previous British guidelines and NICE guidelines, just one-siders, and I know you had them in South Africa as well. They were effective there. So wherever I've seen it, it works. Essentially, the management should be dead simple. If it's along those lines of above 140/90, if non-pharmacologicals fail, treat, simple, and then you're going to use two drugs, name them, A and B. If they fail, try another one, add a third, dead simple. Because most of the patients are easy to treat, it can go down on one sheet. So I'm totally in favor of it. And I think increasingly at a global level, we're going to have community health workers, pharmacists, nurse practitioners doing this because they can and because they'll do it probably better than lots of doctors. But I think a simple approach based on a one-sider piece of advice would be brilliant.
Excellent. That's good to hear that you also have that perspective. So just summarizing this very interesting discussion and to think about our audience being general practitioners here in Australia, I would like you to summarize the key message that you want GPs to take home after this.
Well, the first thing is we'd like them to go away and visit the cvdcheck.org.au website. On there, you'll find the new cardiovascular risk guidelines, our latest primary prevention guidelines for cardiovascular disease. You'll find the new Australian cardiovascular risk calculator that is now the new standard for assessing an individual's risk of developing cardiovascular disease within the appropriate age ranges, generally 45 to 79 years old. I'd like you to familiarise yourself with the new risk categories, which have changed now that there's new calculator. Have a look at the new reclassification factors, which are newly introduced to the guidelines and cover a number of different risk factors that we previously haven't had the opportunity to capture in these processes of risk assessment, and really just familiarise yourself with the new management recommendations, which is all about targeting pharmacotherapy to the highest risk patients and considering pharmacotherapy for those that are at intermediate risk within the 5 to 10% risk category.
Thanks, Natalie. Neil, do you want to give a quick take-home message?
I think the first bit of background is that about 30,000 people die every day due to raised blood pressure. That's far worse than COVID ever did at a daily death rate. So we then realized that only about a third of the people around the world with high blood pressure get their blood pressures controlled to 140/90, and we're getting more aggressive. So we've got to do it better than we're doing it at the moment. So my first thing would I say, let's measure it carefully. It's worth measuring the blood pressure carefully. If you can only use clinic blood pressures, do that properly. Otherwise, I do think that home blood pressure and ABPM is useful. And then I think we should be treating people after non-pharmacological advice. We should treat them at 140/90 should be the threshold for intervention. I think the target should be 130/80 for the vast majority of people. And I think the treatment algorithm should be very simple. We recommended it in the International Society Hypertension Guidelines of RAS blocker plus calcium channel blocker, or RAS blocker plus diuretic, really, is the two basic, and there are particular indications you might use. But keep it very simple, and I think do it. We've got too many people dying of blood pressure around the world. Let's do it effectively.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I think the conversation was really interesting and very useful. And I think it is really key to reflect on these for our GPs who is doing and managing patients at high CVD risk and with high blood pressure every day in their practice. We need to improve blood pressure control in Australia. That is why we've set up the hypertension task force, and we need all hands on deck. The important aspect is to act. When blood pressure is high, when CVD risk is high, we need to act. We've seen too much that there's a situation of treatment inertia. So, Neil mentioned better blood pressure measurement, and this aligns also well with our next episode when we will discuss, can blood pressure measurements be trusted? Join me then again, and thanks for listening.
All resources supporting this interview are available on the Drive Time Radio website. Send your questions and feedback to hypertension@drivetimeradio.com.au. This series is supported by an unrestricted educational grant from Servier and created independently by Drive Time Radio Australia in collaboration with the host and guest experts. Produced December 2023.